the Nan and Eggs Podcast with Rob Namnoom, sponsored by Southern Colorado Napa Auto and Truck Parts, three locations, and Napa know-how to make sure you leave with the right part every time. Call 632-4616. That's 632-4616 for locations, hours, and parts information.
Welcome to another edition of the Nam and Eggs Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Namnoom, sports director at KRDO TV in Colorado Springs Pueblo. On this serving of Nam and Eggs, we'll be joined by Troy Rank of the Denver Channel, Denver 7, the ABC affiliate in Denver, Colorado. He'll join us to talk about the Broncos and the Rockies' run, hopefully, to Rocktober. Now, as you know, Troy is a Pueblo guy who's been covering the Rockies and the Broncos basically since the early 2000s and has some great insight, and really thrilled that Troy's going to be able to join us today on this edition of the Nam and Eggs Podcast. The Nam and Eggs poll question of the day: the Broncos, they're off to a 2-0 start. My question, are they for real? It's a simple yes or no answer. They're 2-0. Are they for real? You can answer that question either at my Twitter handle, which is at Rob Namnoom, or on my Facebook page, which is Rob Namnoom KRDO. And of course, we're live streaming as we record this podcast, so thanks for everybody out there who's paying attention. So far, some of the people who have voted on the poll, a lot of people are saying that the Broncos, no, aren't for real at 2-0. Some people are saying because Vance Joseph is the head coach, they don't believe he can get the job done and that they are for real. And also, some people have commented that they're not a big fan of Bill Musgrave's play calling, although I like the way he's been calling the games thus far through two games. Well, the Rockies begin the night a half game behind the Dodgers in the National League West. They're a half game out of the final wild card spot. Only 12 games left for the Rockies as they're playing maybe their biggest series in franchise history against the Dodgers. This Nam and Eggs podcast presented by Southern Colorado Napa Auto Parts, Auto and Truck Parts, three locations to serve you, and Napa know-how to make sure you leave. When you walk out of Napa, they're going to make sure you leave with the right part in your hand every time. So you can call Napa Auto and Truck Parts at 632-4616. That's 632-4616 for locations, hours, and parts information. So we want to thank Napa for sponsoring this edition of the Nam and Eggs podcast. In the Rockies game on Monday night against the Dodgers in Los Angeles, Trevor Story had to leave the game with an injury in the fourth inning, took a swing, called the trainers over, and after the game, Story says his right elbow has been bothering him. He was evaluated on Tuesday, and as we record this, we hope that Trevor Story is going to be okay because he's played some great baseball this year, and his bat has really been potent in that Rockies lineup. That's the perplexing thing about the Rockies in 2018. Their lineup, you look at it from top to bottom, is pretty good. I'd argue to say one of the better lineups in baseball, and yet they go through these droughts where they don't hit at all. They'll break out for 8 runs, 9 runs, 10 runs, and then, as we saw over the weekend, they get shut out twice by the Giants, and I think the Giants pitching staff is a little underrated, but I think with that lineup, it's surprising that, and this has been kind of a theme throughout the season, that the Rockies lineup just goes dry, and I can't quite figure it out. I mean, Carlos Gonzalez is hitting around, you know, 285 to 300 consistently all season long. Nolan Arenado, I would say over the last couple of weeks, doesn't seem like he's the same guy. There's something bothering him. He was having a little bit of a shoulder issue, but that's the real head scratcher. There's two head scratchers when it comes to the Rockies for me: their lineup and the way they play at home. They've been great on the road this year for most of the season, and at home they just don't have the winning percentage at home like they've had in years past. Had they had that, they probably would be leading the National League West by a good 3 or 4 games. But that's baseball for you. And, you know, you just can't figure those things out sometimes. And let's be honest, it's hitting a baseball is one of the most difficult things to do in professional sports. So we're joined now by Troy Renk, Broncos insider for the Denver Channel, Denver 7, KMGH in Denver, Colorado. And Troy's a Pueblo guy. And I got to say, this is a big thrill for me having Troy on my podcast, my little podcast here for KRDO News Radio. So, Troy, how you doing?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, good. I know you're really busy, so thanks for taking some time. What would you like to chat first, Broncos or Rockies?
Let's go Rockies since it's all right. The event, right?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, trouble last night. I mean, John Gray, man, the bigger the game, the smaller he gets, Rob, and that's unfortunate because that was the best pitching matchup in that series. When you look at Freeland going against Kershaw tonight, and then you turn around and have Anderson is going to go against Buehler in that series finale, and Anderson has not won since July 4th.
Wow.
And in the case of Freeland, he's their best pitcher, but it's hard to beat Kershaw in Dodger Stadium. I can't tell you how many times I covered the Rockies in Dodger Stadium where they're hopeful to scratch out a run. Now, this isn't the Kershaw of old, but still, tough game last night, and they got to find a way to reach the finish line here, man. They're starting to gasp for air a little bit.
Yeah, they got 12 games left, half game behind the Dodgers in the NL West, half game out of the final wild card spot. So John Gray, after he was called up from Albuquerque, was pretty awesome. And then the last couple of starts, he seems to not have a slider. He threw that cement mixer to Max Muncy last night, which he crushed about 400 feet. What has happened with John Gray of late?
Well, in these big games, there's a confidence issue in trusting his secondary pitches. I mean, you identified it. When he doesn't have a secondary pitch, he's hittable. Everyone says, well, he throws 95. Again, about 80% of the guys in the big leagues now throw 95. So they're used to hitting that speed, and then that's the bat speed. Now, the issue with Gray last night, again, you talked about it, he just could not locate his off-speed pitches. In his first 20 pitches when I was watching, he probably missed his spots. I mean, I'm talking dramatically missed his spots and location. Six times? I mean, you can't do that against a team like the Dodgers. They lead the National League in home runs. I think they lead the National League in home runs in the second half. They just go up there looking for walks and pitches they can tater. And when you don't have your secondary pitches, you are vulnerable. And he was last night. It hurt to have to go to your pen that early. It reminded me of the wild card game last year, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, he was less than stellar in that wild card game against the Diamondbacks last year. You talked a little bit about Kyle Freeland. You think he's going to get some? He's not going to win the Cy Young, but do you think he'll get some consideration considering the year he's had under an ERA under 3? He's got 15 wins and has really been one of the best pitchers in National League.
Well, the number he needs to hold on to is 9-2 at home with, I believe, like a 2.36 at Coors Field. I mean, that's amazing. And if you're going to discount hitter stats at Coors Field, which is getting to be a little foolish, given how some of these parks play, whether it's Yankee Stadium, Philly, Arlington, I mean, pick a park, they all start tilting offensively. Now, there's more hits in Coors Field, but that's my point. If you're going to hold it against Coors Field hitters like Arenado, Blackman, Story, then you should give a little boost for Freeland and what he's doing at Coors Field. The problem he's running into is, this is kind of his first year on the scene as a star, and it's almost always your second year you get recognition, which is stupid, but that's how it works. And, you know, you look at Jacob deGrom, Aaron Nola, and Max Scherzer. I mean, arguably he can't compete with them right now in the Cy Young voting. But for me, he'd be, you know, I'm trying to remember when I voted Cy Young, if they expanded it to five guys. If they expanded it to five, he'd be in my five. He'd probably be fourth. I mean, I'm not looking at it in front of me, but he'd probably be fourth on my ballot, and it's time he gets some national attention, again, because of how well he's pitched in Denver.
Yeah, that's for sure. You talked, too, a little bit about the offense. It seems like if you look at run differential, they're minus -4 this year, where you look at the Dodgers, they're plus +152. It seems like this is somewhat of a theme this season where, you know, they'll have a game where they break out for about 8 or 9 runs, maybe even 10, and then their bats go dry. And I know hitting a baseball is one of the most difficult things to do in sports, but you look at their lineup from top to bottom, it's one of the better lineups in baseball. It seems to be perplexing. Is there anything you can put your finger on as to why this happens to that lineup?
Well, they're always going to be slightly streaky, Rob, because of the home road thing. When you go from Coors Field and you go on to, after a long homestand and you go on the road, those balls you were hitting out land on the warning track, the pitches, those curveballs that hung a little bit at altitude now all of a sudden break sharper. I mean, I've seen it. I mean, I covered it for 15 years on a daily basis. Those first few games, especially going on the West Coast, heavy air, the ball breaks more. Guys get frustrated too. That's part of it. Is it's like, well, I didn't get a home run on that. They get big swings. Like, okay, I'm gonna swing harder. And they get pull happy, and that's generally a recipe for disaster. When they're really good, they pass the baton, they take their walks, they manufacture runs. And you know, if you had a criticism of this lineup, they're top heavy again at times. You know, Blackman, LeMahieu, Arenado, Story, sometimes Cargo, but right now Desmond's not hitting. You know, Holiday's provided a nice boost, but it gets to a point where you get 7, 8, 9 in their lineup, 6, 7, 8, they can be pitched to, and they strike out a little more than I would like. I wish they could manufacture runs a little more, but I mean that's kind of the joke. Like, well, I need a team that can hit home runs at Coors and then play small ball on the road. So,
right.
I mean, how many? That's an all-star team then. You know, I mean, those teams don't exist where you just have you're looking at the 27 Yankees and then Whitey Herzog's Cardinals on the road. Like, those teams don't exist. And teams don't run anymore outside of Story. The Rockies run a little bit, but they're going to have to, these next few games, they're going to have to scratch out runs. Sitting around waiting for the double and home run against Kershaw and Buehler, for me, is a flawed strategy.
So the way you look at it is maybe a little more patience at the plate and maybe swiping second base every now and again just to get that runner in scoring position. Is that how you see it?
Well, they're hitting with runners in scoring position. I think through the middle of that game yesterday, they had one hit by a hitter with runners in scoring position on the road trip because Senzatella had the big hit on Sunday.
Right.
So when you get into these games in September, it's really an issue of, okay, we get a walk, then you get a productive out on a hit and run where, okay, you got a runner at second and one out. And now somebody's got to come through. That's where but you can't sit around and wait for the two-run home run. I mean, that's just not, again, if you're the Dodgers, yes. You're built to do that. The Rockies aren't built to do that on a night-to-night basis. And so I'm not saying bunt. It's more productive outs, hitting behind runners, getting guys to third with one or less, you know, two or fewer outs, and giving yourself a chance to scratch it out. Because if I'm telling you, against Kershaw, if you go up with big swings, he's going to go 7 1/3, 5 hits, 1 run, 10 Ks. I've seen that outing from him. 10, 15 times, it seems like.
Yeah, he's going to throw that big 12-6 curveball at you and make you hit weak groundouts. All right, so, Troy, there's 12 games left. How do you see this playing out? Do you think they can win the division for the first time? Do you think they can get into one of those two wild card spots?
Yeah, I mean, these last four games have really put a dent on them winning the divisions. Honestly, to win the division, they probably have to win these next two games. And I don't know that that's realistic. But to get in the playoffs is realistic. You essentially have three teams going for two spots, Dodgers, Cardinals, and Rockies. Of those three, two are getting in. So do I think they're going to – I mean, I said when they choked out those games against St. Louis in Milwaukee on that road trip, was that a month ago?
Yeah.
That was probably going to cost them a playoff spot. So I'm not going to sit here and be hypocritical. But this team has been mentally tough. They've been resilient. And I think they're going to find a way to squeeze into the wild card. But they're running out of steam, Rob. I mean, the reality is this. They got to get somebody else hot in the rotation. I mean, they have to. You got Freeland and Marquez. Somebody else. I mean, I sent the telepitch to okay the other day. Somebody else has got to get hot, number one. And they got to hit with runner scoring position.
Yeah, Marquez has been pretty solid the last two. Marquez has been pretty solid the last 2 months. Troy, care to give us?
He has been really good. He has been really good.
You care to give us your World Series prediction at this point?
Oof. I mean, I would be shocked if the Red Sox aren't in it, especially if Sale's healthy. But can they beat the Astros? Oof.
They always seem to give the Reds. Houston's great in Boston, too. It's almost like that field is tailor-made for their lineup.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it's Astros-Dodgers again, but my prediction, as we sit here today, when I look at it, I'm trying to think. The team that's hot, that's crazy hot, stupid hot, is Milwaukee. The best team on paper is Chicago in the National League. So I'll just say, and again, I haven't looked at it and taken a deeper dive in the numbers, but as we sit here today, if I had to guess, I would say Red Sox-Cubs.
Red Sox-Cubs, oh, man. That would be an intriguing matchup, to say the least. All right, let's shift gears now. Troy Rank from the Denver Channel, Denver 7 ABC affiliate in Denver, Colorado, joining us to talk about the Denver Broncos right now. And, Troy, the Broncos are off to a 2-0 start, as you well are aware. Sixth consecutive year they've done that. But people, it seems like, fans anyway, are looking at this team like the glass is half empty. Do you think this team is for real, or are they somewhat of a pretender at this point?
Well, they've won two games where they've been favored, so there is context, and they've won them both at home. And that you have to take care of business at home. So essentially, they've done what they were supposed to do. What has been intriguing about this start for me and how it might be different than last year is you have a quarterback, Rob, who's 14 for 20 in the fourth quarter with a touchdown and a 113 quarterback rating. He hasn't played well in the first half, Case Keenum, but he, when it's mattered most, he's played his best. They couldn't say that last year on many occasions, obviously when they went 5-11. The other thing that makes this team different, why I think they have a little more staying power, and what does that mean? Is that 8-8, 9-7? I don't know yet. But they're young, and they're young and quality. They have stars developing at key positions in Phillip Lindsay and Cortland Sutton and Bradley Chubb. Josie Jewell played snaps last week. I mean, you have rookie contributors that were – they had no contribution last year from the rookie class except Garrett Bowles. So if you ask me why I think they have a better chance to be competitive throughout the year, I'd say because they're younger. And when you're younger, you're healthier. And when you're healthier, you bring energy. And you can win games later in the season because you're not worn down. You're not injury prone. So that's the development. They have a quarterback they trust, and we'll see how this plays out. But the players clearly believe in him. That's an important thing for the psyche of the team. And secondly, they have young guys making significant contributions that, again, they did not have last year.
So you're saying Paxton Lynch or Trevor Siemian are the quarterback of this football team this season. They more than likely would be 0-2.
I'd say 1-1 for sure. They would have lost one of those two games.
Yeah.
Now, Siemian played well the first 2 weeks last year, and they crushed Dallas. And then it started to get sideways at Buffalo. Siemian threw two picks at Buffalo that lost that game. They win at Buffalo, and then you come back and beat the Raiders. You're 4-0. You know, who knows? I don't know that they're a playoff team, but they would have had a much better chance. The Buffalo game exposed flaws in terms of Siemian, where teams are like, well, he throws to one side of the field. We're going to cut that side of the field off, and if they can't rush, they can get after him. And unfortunately for Trevor, he was injury prone. He's a slight guy. You know, Keenum's built. I mean, I know he's stocky. He's 6 foot. Well, he might be 6'1". I don't know what they list him at, but he's not very big. But
he can barely see over the line.
Yeah, he's. You know, honestly, he was Baker Mayfield before Baker Mayfield in college. If you look up his numbers at Houston, he was almost the same guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly started and played longer than him. But I'm encouraged by the energy and the attitude of this team. There is a different vibe. But, again, it all comes down to their ability to be competitive on the road. Can they win 3 games on the road, 4 games on the road? If they can, then they got a shot to go to the playoffs. If, like last year, they won 1 game on the road and were non-competitive in most of those games.
Yeah, and, I think the locker room says a lot for when we're in there and we're covering the team. You get the years that they were a Super Bowl caliber team, the locker room just had a different feel to it. And that's one of the things I've picked up on this year's team compared to the last two teams. Even in the game, late in the game on Sunday, you know, all the defensive linemen, they're towing that chalk line, and they're so excited when Jake Butt made that catch out of bounds and when Tim Patrick made that big catch. I mean, it seems like collectively, not that every team wants to win, but it seems like these guys really have a strong desire to win football games, and that may carry them a far way this season. Is that how you see it, Troy?
Well, again, when I've covered good teams over the last 20 years, 25 years, however long I've been doing this in Colorado, the scene, all these winning teams had a common thread, Rob, and that's that they had good chemistry. And everyone rolls their eyes at it. It doesn't matter. Stats exist in a vacuum. Okay, all I'm saying is I've coached the last, 13 years of my life. I played sports from 6 until I was, through high school, and my dad's was a coach forever. And good teams, when they have chemistry, here's what happens. It's that cocking and bonding that when stuff gets crazy and adversity strikes, guys have each other's back. And whether it was the 07 Rockies, the 09 Rockies, the Super Bowl Broncos team I covered where Gary Kubiak preached, you know, it's not about you, it's not about me, it's about we. Do it for the guy next to you. And all that stuff people roll their eyes at, when teams buy in and believe in the guy next to him, it's so much more powerful. And then the locker room starts to take ownership. And I'm telling you, more than – if you want a team to be good, have players who take ownership. Because when coaches can yell and scream and make you do stuff at practice and give you the game plan, but when it comes down to it, good teams, players believe in each other. They trust each other, and they pick each other up. And that, I've seen a little bit of that so far. I mean, every guy I've talked to said it's a different mindset. Guys like coming to work. They like being around each other. Now, does that win games by itself? No. But when adversity strikes, typically teams that have good chemistry can limit the pitfall. So, you know, it's a two-game losing streak, not like last year where it was an eight-game losing streak and it sabotages the season.
Let's talk a little bit about one of the new guys, the Denver kid, Philip Lindsay. You mentioned a spark and the youthful enthusiasm that this football team has. Man, I mean, he comes on the field and it's just a different dynamic for the offense. And I know the offense has been less than dynamic, but are you even surprised at what he's done the first two games of his NFL career?
I'm just surprised that they've had the open mind to give him opportunity. Last year, their game planning with McCoy was so ridiculously conservative and stupid and misguided, where you're running three wide receiver sets on a team where you have one functioning wide receiver after Emmanuel Sanders got hurt. It was idiotic. Never used Jamaal Charles out of the backfield. You're running sets that expose your tackles, and it's like, what are you doing? You know, why do you have, Post Malone says, why do you have 12-car garage if you only have six cars? I mean, it was stupid. I mean,
that's
it was
first
so dumb.
On the Nam and Eggs podcast, a Post Malone quote. Anyways, continue, Troy.
So my point is, I'm surprised and encouraged by Bill Musgrave's open mind and creativity. What we all saw in preseason, they saw. Like, wow, this kid can help us. And maybe initially it's 8 to 10 plays, and then you get him out there and go, wait. Why are we limiting him? He's our best guy. Ride the hot hand. Those are kind of things that coaching can win you games that way, instead of getting stubborn and like, well, this guy's going to play because we said he's going to play. Okay. And that, you know what that gets you? A losing record and fired. Your best players have to play and put them in position to make plays. And that's what they've done with Lindsay. And he's a human Red Bull. He comes out there and you can feel him caffeinating the offense. And the one thing you asked what surprises me, I have been surprised at how well he's run between the tackles.
Yes.
Because I saw him at CU. I mean, I'm a CU alum, so I watch almost all of their games when I can. I mean, the guy was an amazing college player, but I didn't know if he'd be a between-the-tackles guy. I thought for sure he was going to get drafted, like, in the sixth or seventh round because of his energy and his versatility, ability to catch the ball in the backfield, special teams, all that. But I didn't know, you know, can he go between the tackles and be effective doing it? And so far he has. Now,
yeah,
would I want him doing it 20 times a game? No, I would not. But 8 times a game? You know, I'm 8 times the chain between the tackles and then getting him outside. Him getting 15 carries is a good number if he's also involved in the passing game. But, man, is he giving them a lift. He is just – and that's what good team – again, you look at the Saints last year with Kamara. They were terrible the year before, and all of a sudden Kamara shows on the scene, and they can't stop the guy. And he had the compliment with Ingram. I get it. But my point is, if you're going to go from 5-11 to the playoffs, you have to have young players make a contribution that's significant. And so far, Lindsay has.
Yeah, we saw Lindsay get some tough yards against the Raiders. They needed 4, as you mentioned, running between the tackles, picking up the 4 or 5 yards. He's not going to run you over, but he'll get you those 3 or 4 yards if you need it. I liked even the hook and ladder the Broncos ran at the end of the first half. You know, I was glad. It's one thing that drives me crazy about the NFL, and I think all 32 teams do it, is they really get conservative, especially late in games. And I know it was a long shot, and they probably didn't think anything was going to happen, but at least they attempted it. And I like that there's a little bit of creativity. And when it comes to Philip Lindsay, Troy, I'm really curious, as the year goes on, do they even line him up in the slot on a third down? Because he's got to be a mismatch for any linebacker in football.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you see shades of Christian McCaffrey in his game, where you can put him in the slot, and he's a mismatch. If you try to cover him with a linebacker right now, good luck. I mean, that's what makes McCaffrey so valuable for the Panthers. He's not really a between-the-tackles guy, but if you just played Christian at slot 100% of the time, he might be the best slot receiver in football. You know, and Lindsay isn't that, but he's similar in that he's a nightmare matchup for a linebacker in space. And the thing that is crazy about Lindsey, he's not a diminutive guy. I mean, if you've been around him, I mean, he's put together. I mean, this idea, oh, he's undersized. Well, he's 5'10", maybe 207. He's a rock. I mean, it's not like he's, you know, a scat back, Tyreek Hill build. I'm just surprised. He wasn't even invited to the combine.
Yeah.
And I watched some of these guys that get invited. I watched them Saturdays in college, and I'm like, this guy can't make plays on a good team where he's the best player on the field. You think he's going to do it in the NFL? No. It goes back to my baseball roots. Like, you have kids who are showcase kids, and then there's kids who produce when it matters in the game. You know, when they don't put it on a tee, when they don't tell you what's coming. Like, I like that kid that knows how to win. Now, you can't have a bunch of scrappy guys. I get it.
Right.
But you can watch certain players and know that guy is a winning player. He's going to find a way to do right by the team. And that's what Lindsey, he's done something no undrafted free agent's ever done. And if any guy had a reason to, you know, thump his chest, the guy couldn't even afford to go to Broncos games, Rob. Now he doesn't need a ticket. He just shows up and they see his face and say, come on in, you're playing. And if any guy had a reason to beat his chest and tell scouts, what were you looking at? It's him, and all he has done is remain humble. And that's what I mean, the difference of this rookie class compared to a year ago. Those guys thought they were entitled. They thought they felt entitled. They felt they had made it. Now most of them are gone or inactive on game day.
Or on the practice squad.
Position. Right, that's what I mean, because they didn't get it.
Yeah.
They show up and think the NFL, you're on scholarship. Well, my junior year I'll play. No, by your third year, you get cut like Paxton. Like, if you don't figure it out, this is guy's livelihood. This is a business. It's not college. And the guys last year in that draft class, they just did not get it. I mean, for another lack of a better expression, they didn't get it. This year's class, every guy in the class was a captain except one. And Lindsey, undrafted, he was a captain. And their football knowledge and maturity is so strikingly different than a year ago. And that's why they're contributing, because they can get in a film room and they can get in a meeting and take it to the practice field. And we did not see that last year.
Yeah, I asked Philip what it meant to him beating the Raiders, being a Denver kid, and his eyes just lit up. I mean, if anybody understood about the Broncos-Raiders rivalry, and, you know, playing in his first game against Oakland and winning, I mean, you know, it was almost like he reverted back to being 10 years old again growing up in Aurora. It's really great to see. And it just goes to show you, Troy, the whole evaluation process in the NFL is so messed up. You play 4 years, you have all this great game tape, people have seen you, and what do they do? Ah, well, he put up 225 25 times at the combine. Let's take him in the first and second round. I mean, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, it's not an exact science, and it's a hard job. I get it, especially in baseball where you're projecting how high school kids will eventually be in 4 or 5 years. So it's even harder in baseball because of the projectability thing and will a kid grow and how will he deal with being in the minor leagues, a million miles away from his family,
yeah,
lonely. And, you know, that, I get baseball is hard, but football, the high-level football is AAA for me. So you should be able to see, and I know these college offenses don't translate to the NFL anymore, but the running back position can be evaluated. Like, I get why quarterbacks don't succeed, because they run a playbook that has a Waffle House menu on the sideline. They have no responsibility, no audibles. They don't know anyone else's assignments. So when they get to the pros, they're lost. I get that. And
yeah,
even with linemen, same thing in the spread offense. Running backs, I don't understand why that's so hard to see. The guy from the Niners is undrafted. He's leading the league
right
in rushing, and Philip Lindsey is third.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's another reason why if you're Le'Veon Bell, like, they don't pay running backs. You can find running backs. You can find them and unearth them. And, you know, in Lindsey's case, the Broncos look like they got a good one.
And that run he made in the first half, he cut on a dime and didn't decelerate. I mean, I was just like, how the hell did he do that? It was unbelievable. He cuts like Clinton Portis, but he's quicker. That's the only comparison I can make that I've seen it with the guy who's toted the rock in a Broncos uniform. I mean, that run alone says a lot about his God-given ability.
Yeah, let's not forget. I mean, we want to play this underdog story. I'm telling you, if you watched him in high school and college, he's not an underdog story. The guy's really talented.
Yeah.
He's just smaller. You know, because he's 5'10", he's not 6'1", 220, But don't think for a second this is some underdog Rudy story and local kid gets a chance. I mean, he is really, really talented. And all he's done since his last down in college is work like an absolute animal to put himself in this position.
All right, Troy, do you have a minute or two left? Can I hold you up?
Yeah, got a minute or two.
Yep. All right. So you're a Pueblo guy. Where did you go to high school?
Pueblo Centennial.
Pueblo Centennial. All right. And your father was a coach. Was he a coach at Centennial, or what did he coach? Football or baseball?
Pueblo Central. He coached me in baseball, basketball, and football growing up. In high school, he coached baseball Centennial briefly, and then he ended up being the assistant head coach at Central in baseball, and he was the head basketball coach at Central. And he was the head basketball coach after I graduated, but he was at the rival school. But they had that stupid rule. I kind of get it, but you had to be a teacher in the building
right
to be the head coach. So, I mean, I wish he'd have been my head baseball coach my last couple of years in that regard, but he was not. He was over at Central, and he taught there forever.
Yeah, and he's in the Pueblo Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah.
The Sports Hall of Fame?
Carter Motorsports Hall of Fame, Pueblo Sports Hall of Fame. A lot of it has to do with his drag racing. And growing up, he was a drag racer, mainly top field drag racing from, when I was born in 70, he raced up until about 82, 83. He was nationally ranked forever. And then later in his life, and even recently, he set Bonneville speed records in his roadster going 246 miles per hour.
Wow.
So he's in the NHRA Hall of Fame for his work at Bonneville. But, yeah, growing up at Pueblo, everybody knew my dad because of the race car. He would take it around to schools and start up his top field dragster. And so it was cool, and he's still into cars now.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Troy, really appreciate you joining me and giving us some insight on the Broncos and the Rockies, and you really are one of the good dudes in this business, and I really appreciate you coming on the Nam and Aches podcast today.
Anytime, man. Look forward to seeing you at Broncos soon.
All right. Troy Rank of the Denver Channel, Broncos Insider, giving us a little insight here. We appreciate Troy joining us today. We got a few more minutes here of the Nam and Aches podcast. I'm going to give you some of my thoughts of what I've seen over the first 2 weeks of the NFL season, over the Broncos season. I think, as Troy mentioned, the big reason why the Broncos are off to a 2-0 start is they have a legitimate quarterback in Case Keenum. And that's why John Elway went out and he spent a lot of money and he went out and targeted Case Keenum. Case Keenum is a guy he wanted. In fact, he was a guy he wanted a few years ago when he was with the Rams, tried to make a trade for Keenum, but it didn't work out. Now John Elway has his guy. I will say defensively in the secondary, although I think Tremaine Brock played fairly well against the Raiders, their depth concerns me a little bit. I don't think they're the no-fly zone that we saw in years past, and it's not only because Aqib Talib isn't there. I think Justin Simmons is emerging as one of the better safeties, but I would like to see some of the nickel guys, and I know Pac-Man Adam Jones is dealing with a little bit of a hamstring injury right now. I think they're going to need those nickel corners to really step up their game a little bit. I mean, we saw, on Sunday, Derek Carr looked like Rich Gannon from back in the day. I mean, he has already mastered the John Gruden offense in two games into the season. He struggled against the Rams, but let's face it, who hasn't struggled against the Rams during their first 2 weeks of the season? In fact, the Rams pitching a shutout in week two. But it was amazing to see, a lot of people question, can John Gruden still coach? And that question has yet to be answered because the Raiders are 0-2. But it's amazing to see how Derek Carr masterfully ran John Gruden's offense. And, man, what shocked me last Sunday was how many touches Marshawn Lynch got. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, he was not being used that way the last couple of years. He must love playing for John Gruden. It's the old West Coast offense, right? You throw those little short passes out to the flat, and then all of a sudden the tight end's open in the middle. And then we're going to run the football at you a little bit and try and wear you down. And I think because of the Raiders' collective age on that team, you saw them wear down in the fourth quarter against the Broncos. And that's one of the reasons why Case Keenum and the Broncos were able to have a come-from-behind victory for a second straight week. We talked a lot about Philip Lindsay, and I mean, he is just going to be a darling in Broncos country, not only because he's a Denver kid, but because of the spark he has given that offense. I really like what I've seen out of Jake Butt. He seems to know how to get open. He seems to know how to fight for extra yards, which I like to see out of a tight end. So I would love to see where Jake Butt is a year or two from now, because he is their top tight end and their top target when it comes to the tight end game. We talk a lot about, especially in football being a game of inches, and we saw that in Sunday's game. So if you're concerned about the Broncos offense, now I'm always like the glass is half full kind of a guy, and I know that, and I admit that. I'm a pretty optimistic person. I'm not cynical. A lot of people in my profession, they're cynical folks. I am not one of those guys because, let's face it, I can't play for the Denver Broncos, nor do I pretend like I could have. Do I know more of the coaches? No, but I know enough, and that's why I do this Nam and Eggs podcast. But if you look at the offense, the game of inches, they had two touchdowns called back, one on Cortland Sutton, one on Tim Patrick, because they had their foot on the line, they didn't have 2 feet in bounds, so they're close. And I think a lot of it has to do with this is week two, and now they're going into week three, and they're going to play in Baltimore, and they're going to play against the Ravens, and in the preseason, they just don't get enough work. So those plays where they're out by a half an inch, a quarter of an inch, a millimeter, those are going to be touchdowns come week 10, week 11, week 12. What does concern me when it comes to the Broncos offense is Demaryius Thomas. We saw in that final drive, that game-winning drive, DT was not clutch at all. He dropped a pass. There was another pass thrown to him a little bit high where it could have been, it was questionable, it could have been called pass interference. Regardless, he's got to make that catch, and it makes me wonder if DT's heart is still in it. And after you've played, you know, 8+ years in the NFL, it's very easy for you to not have your heart in it anymore. And there were some whispers, and there was even a little bit of reporting about how DT contemplated retirement after last season. Let's face it, the last 2 years before the season was not very fun for Demaryius Thomas because of the inept offense. So I wonder if DT's heart is still in it. So I question that, and I hope, you know, he can be rejuvenated thanks to Case Keenum. Emmanuel Sanders, as I mentioned on this podcast, has been pretty good during the first 2 weeks. I told you he's going to have a good connection. He's got great chemistry with Case Keenum. Domantas Peko, man, he's just been eating up that D-line. He has played great. And this is a guy who's been there, done that in the NFL. So that's great to see. You got that run stopper just kind of clogging the middle of that line. So I hope Domantas can stay healthy and continue to play at the level that he's played at. Around the NFL, we learned on Monday how cruel the NFL world can be, especially if you don't perform. Classical Academy former kicker, and graduate Daniel Carlson, cut by the Vikings after missing all 3 field goal attempts against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, including the one in overtime that would have won them the game from only 35 yards out. And they just got rid of him. And Mike Zimmer on Monday said, that was an easy decision. You know, the Vikings have PTSD when it comes to their kickers. You look over their history of their team, and they have had some big missed kicks in playoff games. They're an NFL team with Super Bowl aspirations. And I guess the way they looked at it with Daniel Carlson is, we might as well get rid of a kicker now in week two versus keeping him and having him struggle in the playoffs and us missing out on an opportunity because a kicker cannot make an easy field goal or an easy field goal by NFL standards. Ryan Fitzpatrick lighting it up for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the first 2 weeks. I would be surprised if the Bucs gave Jameis Winston his job back. The Steelers are an absolute mess, but can obviously resolve that and probably will. That seems to be the way this team has been over the last couple of years. They're kind of like an afternoon soap opera. The Patriots seem desperate. They've signed Josh Gordon, who's had his substance abuse problems, a week before they signed Corey Coleman, who was a first-round draft pick of the Browns who didn't work out. They've already cut him. The Patriots are missing Justin Edelman. But keep in mind, as they say, and it's cliche, the NFL is a week-to-week business, and things can change on a dime. So the Broncos are 2-0. They head to Baltimore this Sunday to take on the Ravens, an early game. Got to be honest, I don't like this game for the Broncos at all. Would not be surprised if they lost to the Ravens. The Rockies begin the night a half game out of first place in the National League West and out of the final wild card spot. It's looking more and more likely that the Rockies are going to be a wild card team and playing that wild card game versus winning the National League West. I just can't see anybody beating the Dodgers, especially with that lineup, especially with the way they can hit. So you've been listening to this edition of the NAM and Eggs podcast presented by Southern Colorado Napa Auto and Truck Parts, three locations, and Napa know-how to make sure you leave with the right part every time. You know, if you're a dude who doesn't know much about your car, go to Napa. Those guys will help you out. They are very knowledgeable. They'll punch it up on the computer. They will get you the right part in your hand. So call Napa at 632-4616, 632-4616. Anytime I have any issues with my cars, I head to Napa so I can get my hands on the right part so my car or my vehicle will run at its peak performance. So Napa, call them at 632-4616. Want to thank Troy Rink from the Denver Channel, the Broncos insider, for giving us some great insight on the 2018 Broncos and the Rockies as they try and make a run to Rocktober. And, of course, I want to thank everybody for taking part in downloading this edition of the NAM and Aches podcast. I'm Rob Namnoom. Want to thank the producer of the NAM and Aches podcast, TJ, who always does a fantastic job. And I want to thank you, the listener, for consuming this product. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for listening to this edition of the NAM and Eggs podcast. Have a good week.
You've been listening to the weekly NAM and Eggs podcast with Rob Namnoom, sponsored by Southern Colorado, Napa Auto and Truck Parts, three locations, and Napa know-how to make sure you leave with the right part every time. Call 632-4616. That's 632-4616 for locations, hours, and parts information.